All right, listeners, get ready for this deep dive, because we're going deep into a world you might not expect.
That's right. We're talking about cooking with a toaster.
You heard that right. And our source material for this deep dive, two very special cookbooks you sent in, Cooking with a Two-Slot Toaster, and its sequel, Cookbook The Lost Recipes.
And you know, at first glance, you might think, oh, this will be a quick read, a fun little novelty.
Yeah, I had the same thought.
But I have to tell you, these books are packed with surprises.
Oh, absolutely. These are not your typical cookbooks, not by a long shot.
No, they're not.
We'll be exploring the work of Patrick R.F. Blakely and Patrick Gannon,
the authors of these unique culinary and philosophical explorations.
Okay, so right off the bat, the dedication in the first book, it's to everyone in the entire world, past and present, except Chef Jim Drake.
Now, who is this mysterious Chef Jim Drake?
Right. Like, what did this guy do? Did he burn the toast? Did he use the wrong kind of jelly?
We may never know. But it definitely sets a playful tone.
It does. And that playfulness continues throughout both books.
Oh, yeah. They don't hold back the humor.
I mean, you wouldn't believe the level of detail they go into for something as simple as making room temperature air.
Room temperature air as a dish. I mean,
as a dish, complete with considerations for your HVAC system.
Oh, wow.
It's amazing.
I mean, it is funny, but when you think about it, it's kind of brilliant.
How so?
Well, they're taking something we usually take for granted, the air we breathe, and making us think about it in a whole new way.
Mm. I see your point. It's like they're saying, hey, pay attention to the little things, even the things that seem invisible.
Exactly. And that attention to detail is evident in their multi-step process for achieving perfectly regular toast.
Oh, yeah. Talk about meticulous. They have you practicing elaborate knife flipping techniques before you even get to the buttering stage.
Knife flipping? For toast?
I know, right?
Mm-hmm.
It's ridiculous and hilarious at the same time. But there's also something kind of charming about it.
I think so, too. It's like they're encouraging us to slow down and appreciate the process.
That's a good point. It's not just about the end result of the perfect piece of toast. It's about the journey.
And you know, that theme of mindfulness really comes through in the recipe for buttered toast with jelly.
Oh, yeah. The buttered toast with jelly recipe. That one's a real trip. They encourage you to visualize yourself becoming the jelly, spreading yourself onto the toast.
That's a new one.
I know, right?
Ah.
It's so out there. But there's something about it that makes you think, maybe there's something to this.
Maybe they're onto something. It's like a form of culinary meditation.
I like that culinary meditation.
You're focusing on the senses, the feel of the knife, the smell of the toast, the taste of the jelly.
It's making me hungry just thinking about it.
Me too.
I'm curious to see if I can actually achieve that jelly becoming one with toast experience. But these books go beyond basic toast. They venture into some pretty interesting territory, like reheating leftover pizza slices in a toaster.
Oh, yeah, that one caught my eye, too. And of course, they emphasize the importance of using toaster bags for safety and legal reasons.
Always with the legal disclaimers, it's like they're afraid of being sued by the toaster police.
Maybe they have a history with the toaster police we don't know about.
Maybe. But what really struck me was their use of mathematical formulas.
Mathematical formulas in a cookbook.
Yeah. Like a formula for adjusting toaster settings for frozen waffles or calculating the area of a pizza slice.
It's almost like a parody of scientific cooking, but it's so funny.
It is. And then just when you think they couldn't get any more unexpected, they drop a recipe for duck pâté en croûte in the sequel.
Duck pâté en croûte in a toaster.
That's a pretty big leap from room temperature air.
I know, right? A dish that's traditionally prepared in a wood-fired oven, now being made in a toaster. It's mind-boggling.
It is. It really makes you wonder what else they're capable of.
Speaking of mind-boggling, these books are also full of philosophical tangents that seem to come out of nowhere.
Oh, yeah. Like in the middle of a recipe for Susan, a dish celebrating notable women named Susan.
They launch into a deep dive on the history of women's rights.
It's like they're saying, hey, while your toast is cooking, why not learn about the struggles of women throughout history? It starts with an explanation of those revolving serving trays, the ones everyone calls the Susan.
Right.
And then it turns into the celebration of famous women named Susan throughout history.
It's amazing how they connect these like totally random topics.
It is.
And I think it speaks to a larger theme in the book, which is finding the unexpected in the mundane.
You're right. It's like they're saying, hey, even a simple serving tray can be a jumping off point for a fascinating journey through history and culture.
Yeah. And they really go all in. Mm-hmm. They talk all about Susan B. Anthony, the suffragist.
Oh, yeah.
And then they list all these other notable Susans.
Okay.
Actresses to diplomats to chess champions.
A lot of Susans.
They even give a shout out to the sousaphone, which they consider an honorary Susan.
It's a clever and funny way to celebrate the achievements of women in different fields.
It's really quite remarkable how they managed to weave these seemingly disparate elements together: cooking, humor, philosophy, and history.
It's a unique blend, that's for sure.
And they don't shy away from big questions either, like in the Purchasing Your First Used Toaster chapter.
Purchasing Your First Used Toaster. What kind of philosophical questions could they possibly extract from that?
Well, they delve into the concept of time as a spiral, suggesting that we might experience every life form in the universe over and over again.
Wow, that's pretty deep for a cookbook.
It is. But it's presented in such a lighthearted way that it's both intriguing and entertaining.
I'm starting to see these cookbooks as more than just recipes.
We do. They're like a conversation starter, a way to explore different ideas and perspectives.
And that's what's so fascinating here. They're using the familiar act of cooking to open up these unexpected avenues of thought.
It's like they're saying, hey, let's have some fun with these big ideas while we're making toast.
Exactly. And that's what makes these books so captivating.
They're a reminder that even the most ordinary things, like a toaster, can be a source of wonder and inspiration.
Absolutely. So far, we've only scratched the surface of these amazing cookbooks.
There's so much more to explore, so much more to unpack.
Stay with us as we continue our deep dive into the world of toaster cuisine in our next part.
Buckle up. It's going to be a wild ride.
Welcome back to our deep dive. You know, before we move on from the lost recipes, I keep thinking about that ship of Theseus's idea.
Oh, yeah, the whole bagel thing. If you replace all the parts, is it still the same bagel?
Yeah.
I gotta admit that one kind of stuck with me too.
It's a question that's been around for centuries. You know, are we just a collection of parts, or is there something more that makes us us?
And it's not just about bagels either, right? It applies to people, to objects, to everything, really.
Exactly. And the authors, they don't just throw it out there and move on. They actually encourage readers to like really grapple with these philosophical concepts, even going so far as to suggest enrolling in a philosophy program.
It's like, hey, while you're waiting for your toast to pop, why not contemplate the meaning of existence?
It's that kind of playful intellectualism that really sets these cookbooks apart.
They're not afraid to challenge readers, but they always do it with a sense of humor.
It never feels like a lecture or a textbook. It's more like you're having a conversation with a couple of friends who happen to be really into toasters and philosophy.
Right. And speaking of conversations, remember that Last Jedi critique we mentioned?
Oh, yeah. The one tucked away in a chapter that's supposed to be a joke.
They go into detail about plot holes, inconsistencies, character development, all
of it. It's like they're sitting there with you sharing their thoughts and frustrations over a beer.
It's very conversational, very authentic,
and
surprisingly insightful.
They point out things you might not have even noticed, like the introduction of fuel as a major plot device after 7 films.
Or the sheer number of times Finn and Rose manage to escape certain doom through sheer luck.
And, of course, they lament the lack of toaster droids in the film.
The toaster droid bit had me cracking up. It's so absurd, but it fits perfectly with the tone of the books.
They're not afraid to be silly, to poke fun at themselves and at the things they love.
And that self-awareness extends to their own work, too.
Okay, ready for a total change of pace?
Okay.
The next chapter is called Foul Tactics Overcooking Your Game. And it starts with this analogy of overcooked foul.
Okay.
And then dives into a critique of intentional fouling in basketball.
Wow.
It's such a bizarre transition.
I know.
But somehow it works.
Right. And what's fascinating is how they connect these totally unrelated topics.
Yeah, how do they do that?
Through the idea of overcooking or ruining something.
Interesting.
They're arguing that intentional fouling, while sometimes strategically beneficial, ultimately detracts from the spirit of the game. Just like overcooking ruins a perfectly good piece of meat.
So it's like they're saying that even if something is technically allowed, it can still like violate the unwritten rules of fair play.
Exactly. And it makes you think about the evolution of rules in sports. Do rules always make the game better? Or do they sometimes create these loopholes that can be exploited and ultimately detract from the original intention of the game? It's a really thought-provoking question.
It is.
And they present it in such a unique and engaging way.
It's like they're giving you a crash course in the evolution of basketball strategy through this absurd analogy.
And I think that's what makes this book so compelling. They take these everyday concepts, whether it's toast or basketball, and twist them in a way that makes you see them in a whole new light.
It's true. It's like they're taking the whole concept of a cookbook and turning it on its head.
For sure.
They're saying, hey, this is a space for creativity, not just instruction manuals.
And that's what makes this book so refreshing. It's a reminder that food can be fun and playful.
Yeah.
Not just something that keeps us alive.
Okay, now let's cleanse our palates with a glass of water, the safest recipe in the book.
Ah, yes. A chapter dedicated to drinking water in a cookbook. Come on.
It's brilliant, isn't it? It's like they're making fun of all those other cookbooks with their serious tone and complicated instructions.
Yeah.
And they even include this crazy detailed legal disclaimer about drinking water.
I know. It's hilarious.
It's the perfect way to come down from the absurdity of that last chapter.
It is. So speaking of weird and wonderful.
Oh, yeah.
Let's talk about Toast 3. This chapter really shows how much the authors don't care about, like, practicality.
Oh, yeah. Toast 3. This is where they try to make a three-sided sandwich.
Right.
Using just a normal two-slot toaster.
It's like they're challenging the very laws of physics in toast.
They really are. And it's not just the, like, impossible shape of the sandwich that's funny.
I know.
But, you know, besides the humor.
Yeah.
There's something interesting about how they present this impossible recipe.
What do you mean?
It's like they're encouraging people to experiment and not be afraid to fail.
That's a great point. They're saying, hey, even if this sandwich is a total disaster, at least you tried something new.
Exactly. And they don't stop there. They actually challenge the reader to come up with a scientific experiment.
To figure out the best way to eat this sandwich that can't even exist.
Yeah. And they even give you step-by-step instructions for how to do the experiment.
Complete with tips on how to get funding.
I love it. It's like a mix of a cookbook and a science journal.
And there's that part about Patrick Gannon being employee of the month countless times while writing the cookbook.
I know. It's such a normal detail.
But it's so funny because everything else is so crazy.
And they even include a guide on how to write a toaster cookbook.
It's like they're in on the joke. They know how ridiculous this all is. But they're having so much fun with it. And they want you to join in on the fun.
And for those who are really paying attention, they've hidden little gems throughout the book, like a word search in the lost recipes. It's like a little Easter egg hunt for dedicated readers.
I love that they put so much thought and care into creating these books. It's clear they're not just trying to teach you how to make toast. They're trying to create an experience.
An experience that's funny, thought-provoking, and maybe even a little bit life-changing.
I know. I'm looking at my toaster in a whole new light now after reading these books.
Me too. It's not just an appliance anymore. It's a portal to a world of culinary adventure and philosophical exploration.
Who knew the humble toaster could be so much more than just a breakfast companion?
It's a testament to the power of imagination and the ability to find the extraordinary in the ordinary.
And speaking of the extraordinary, there are some truly unique recipes in these books that we haven't even touched on yet. From toaster soup to a dish literally called toaster, where you eat the appliance.
We'll delve into those culinary oddities in our final part, so stay tuned.
We're back and ready to wrap up our deep dive into the world of toaster cuisine.
It's been a wild ride, hasn't it? From room temperature air to the ship of Theseus. Who knew a toaster could be so philosophical?
I know, right? But we promised to delve into some of the more unconventional recipes, so let's get to it. You mentioned toaster soup earlier. How does that even work?
Well, they actually instruct you to seal the toaster with tape or caulk, basically turning it into a makeshift cooking pot.
You're kidding, right? Like cooking soup inside the toaster.
That's what they say. I haven't tried it myself. I have to admit the idea of sealing my toaster with caulk is a little intimidating.
Yeah, I think I'll stick to my regular soup pot for now. But what about something a little less extreme? Any other interesting recipes that caught your eye?
Well, there's a recipe for toast with cinnamon sugar. That sounds pretty straightforward, but they have a very specific warning. Don't make it crunchy.
Don't make it crunchy. Why not?
Apparently, they're worried about legal repercussions from a certain cereal company.
Oh, right. The legal disclaimers. Always with the legal disclaimers. Like, they're expecting to be sued by everyone who owns a toaster.
Maybe they just want to be prepared for any eventuality. You know, better safe than sorry.
I guess so. But it does add to the humor of it all. This constant fear of litigation lurking beneath the surface of these seemingly innocent recipes.
And then there's the toasted English muffins recipe, which instructs you to drive to McDonald's and order an Egg McMuffin.
Wait, what? That's not a recipe. That's a fast food run.
I know, right? That's like they're saying, hey, we're not even going to pretend to give you a real recipe for this one. Just go buy it.
It's so cheeky. So unexpected. But that's what makes these books so much fun. They keep you on your toes. You never know what they're going to throw at you next.
And just when you think you've got them figured out, they throw in another curveball, like the philosophical musings in the toasted bagels recipe.
They just can't resist a good philosophical dilemma, can they?
It's like they're saying, hey, while you're toasting your bagel, why not ponder the nature of identity and change?
It's a brilliant way to engage the reader on multiple levels. It's not just about the food. It's about the ideas, the questions that the food inspires.
And that's what makes these cookbooks so unique. They're not just a collection of recipes. They're a journey, a conversation, an exploration of the world around us.
I have to say, after spending time with these books, I feel like my perspective on cooking has changed a bit. I'm more open to experimentation, to trying new things, to pushing the boundaries of what's possible.
Me too. It's like they've given us permission to be playful, to have fun in the kitchen, to not take ourselves too seriously.
And to always be on the lookout for the extraordinary in the ordinary, because you never know where you might find it, even in a humble toaster.
That's the beauty of these cookbooks. They remind us that the world is full of wonder and possibility if we just open our minds to it.
Just a warning, though.
What's that?
Don't try any of these recipes at home. Unless you're feeling really adventurous and have a good sense of humor.
And maybe a fire extinguisher, just in case.
That's probably a good idea. So to our listeners out there, we encourage you to embrace the unexpected, to find the humor in the everyday, and to never underestimate the power of a good toaster.
You never know what adventures await you in your own kitchen. Thanks for joining us on this deep dive into the world of toaster cuisine.